army launched an attack against four police posts, killing 13 policemen and wounding 9.
And that has led to new violence in Myanmar. This is Thursday, January 10th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Mellon in Washington. Also ahead, optimism after longer-than-planned trade talks between the U.S. and China. Does that U.S.-China trade war have any effect on the world's largest electronic show? We'll take you there to find out. And new technology that's needed to transition to a new age of motor vehicles. All on today's VOA Asia. Hundreds of thousands of Rohingya have been forced in many instances brutally from their homes in Myanmar and have fled to neighboring Bangladesh. That has been well documented in the media. But over the past few weeks, renewed violence has been taking place in Myanmar's Rakhine State, the same area that once housed the Rohingya. That has so far been hiding below the level of headlines and breaking news in most of the international news media. We welcome to VOA Asia Deborah Eisenman, Managing Director of the Asia Society Policy Institute. There she leads and oversees projects on development, governance, sustainability, and security challenges throughout Asia, with a particular focus on Myanmar, Central Asia, and Iran. Deborah, thanks for being with us. Just give us an overview to start with of what's happening here and what's happening now and why.
Sure, Ira. So what's happening now is that the Tatmadaw, Myanmar's military, and the Arakan army in Rakhine State have been having skirmishes for the past about month. And over the weekend, on Myanmar's Independence Day, the Arakan army launched an attack against four police posts, killing 13 policemen and wounding 9. This, in turn, has now caused the Myanmar military to say that they will crush the Arakan army and to really renew calls for violence in a region that's already been so deeply affected by conflict.
Now, are these people who make up the Arakan army, are they Rohingya?
No. So the Arakan army is comprised of Rakhine Buddhists. It's completely separate from the Arakan Rohingya Salvation Army, for instance, which was considered a terrorist group by the military and by Myanmar's government, which is a Rohingya-focused organization. The Arakan army is focused on rights for Rakhine Buddhists.
And what is their beef with the Myanmar army?
Well, ethnic conflict in Myanmar is going on 70 years strong now, so all of these beefs are actually quite quite well baked and have been going on for quite a long time. The Arakan Army is a relatively new ethnic armed group. It's been around for about the past 10 years, trained by actually the Kachin Independence Army. And the Arakan Army is really, looking for territory and representation for their people. They're looking for both a federalist model, but also just having, autonomy as Rakhine State.
Is there an incident that has sparked this latest outbreak?
Well, there have been a few. So, throughout the country, and this has been happening obviously for the past 70 years, but also an escalation just over the past year or two. You see these skirmishes, these exchanging of fire over perceived slights based on one army stepping on the other's perceived territory and those things. And so that's what's been happening over the past month with smaller scale kind of conflicts and smaller scale displacement of local civilians. What's happened now, though, over the weekend is a much larger scale attack by the Arakan army, which will now in turn get a disproportionately large attack by the Tatmadaw.
Now, if this is not a religious dispute, what is it?
It's not a religious dispute. It's really a territorial and political dispute, quite frankly, but waged by an insurgent army.
Is there any evidence that any other country in the world might be involved in this?
Clear evidence, no. Certainly plausible that, money comes through back channels from other countries, or that the Arakan army might have some armaments or have some folks across another border. But there's no direct line to China or India or Bangladesh or others of Myanmar's neighbors that could point to it and say, you know, you're behind something quite nefarious here.
Myanmar's de facto leader Aung San Suu Kyi has borne, as you know, much of the ire of the world about how she has handled the Rohingya crisis. Now some reports say she has made some incendiary remarks about this latest conflict. In fact, it was a remark that you brought up earlier in our talk here.
Yes, you know, there's been some conversation that seems to be coming from her office, both saying that we have to crush the insurgency. The spokesperson for the president has also made some attempts to liken the Arakan Army to the Arakan Rohingya Salvation Army and say there are ties there. All of this is, you know, the ties are unclear, and in terms of what Aung San Suu Kyi and the government does, you know, the Arakan Army hasn't been welcomed into the peace process. So some of this is political, and some of this is obviously military.
Deborah Eisenman is Managing Director of the Asia Society Policy Institute. Deborah, we thank you so much for telling us about this story, which I think we both agree has been somewhat underreported around the world.
Thank you very much. And yes, I'm glad to be speaking about it. It's an important story to cover.
These are among the top Asia stories you'll find right now on voanews.com. Panic grips Rohingya refugees living along the Myanmar-Bangladesh border after clashes between Myanmar security forces and an ethnic insurgency group. The United Nations Refugee Agency has determined that Rahaf Mohammed Al-Kunun, an 18-year-old Saudi woman who fled to Thailand, is a refugee and has asked Australia to grant her residence. Japan will seek talks with Seoul regarding a South Korean court decision against a Japanese company over the issue of wartime forced labor. A massive crowd of Filipino Catholics hold a raucous procession Wednesday with a centuries-old black statue of Jesus Christ in Manila. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. Trade talks between the United States and China were extended into a third day Wednesday. The U.S. trade delegation in Beijing is returning to Washington after what officials described as a few good days. While we do not yet know details of the discussions, VOA Asia's Jim Stevenson asked Curtis Chin, the former U.S. ambassador to the Asia Development Bank and Asia Fellow at the Milken Institute, what the delegation likely accomplished.
You know, when you think about kind of the arc of this trade dispute, it's really issues that have long persisted in the U.S.-China trading relationship. So it goes back to things like, you know, are American, but other companies too that are not Chinese, but are American companies being forced to share technology, to give up technology? Are the Chinese strictly enforcing the rules that they have? And then looking at some of the rules and policies they're putting in place, you know, are they going to do things? I don't say infamous, but clearly there was a policy that Xi Jinping, President of China, was promoting, which was a Made in China policy, which was a grand strategy to almost take back control of some critical things like, let's say, the chips that might go into your phone, right? They want their own GPS system. And certainly you can understand that if you're China, that they want to have control of their own destiny too. But they need to do it in a way that's also respectful of the global trading system. So the U.S. delegation that has just finished, you know, my hope is that there has been progress. The reality is that we need to have a face-saving way out really for both sides. That this trade tension, some people call it, if not a trade war, a tariffs war, the threat from the United States of another round of tariffs come March 1, still, in a sense, hangs over both sides' heads, American businesses, American farmers, but also from the Chinese side. My hope is that that deadline will drive really concessions, progress from the Chinese side, but also from the U.S. side, a recognition that we need to come up with a way that also is a face-saving way out and forward for both sides.
U.S. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross had mentioned there were things that we could do to reach some immediate agreements with China. Is this what the trade delegation was trying to focus on to kind of bring back a quick win, if you will?
And I was struck by the makeup of the trade delegation. Let me pick just on one specific area. So it included reps from our agricultural side. So I think in the past, given this continuing persistent trade deficit, there's been talk about can the Chinese do more to purchase U.S. products. You know, clearly, you know, we talk about soybeans, but there's a range of products that China could more immediately take some action to purchase. So that perhaps will be one. But again, I think what's more important isn't those just immediately doable things, which are great to signal progress. But more important, again, is the structural challenges that need to be addressed and ultimately overcome to the benefits of both sides.
Curtis Chin, former U.S. ambassador to the Asia Development Bank and Asia Fellow at the Milken Institute, speaking with VOA Asia's Jim Stevenson. Happening now in Asia, the Kazakh Foreign Ministry says China is allowing more than 2,000 ethnic Kazakhs to abandon their Chinese citizenship and leave the country, a sign that Beijing may be starting to feel a mounting backlash against its sweeping crackdown on Muslims in the far west region of Xinjiang. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. Hundreds of thousands of visitors have gathered in the city of Las Vegas, Nevada, to attend the Consumer Electronics Show. VOA's Michelle Quinn drew the assignment of heading to what has been called the world's largest adult toy store, and she joins us now. Michelle, we'll talk about the highlights of the show so far in just a moment, but I want to start with the U.S.-China trade dispute. What kind of effect, if any, has that dispute had on the show so far?
Well, we don't really know, but one thing that we've noticed is there's a lot fewer Chinese-based businesses on the show floor. About 20% less came this year compared to last year. Now, the organizers, the Consumer Technology Association, says that those who've come to Las Vegas this year from China are taking up more floor space, so they're spending more money, and they're a pretty big presence. And these are some of the biggest companies in China: Alibaba, Baidu. But there's fewer people, fewer exhibitors in general, and we can only attribute that maybe to the trade war. I mean, I talked to a few people on the floor who said it didn't seem to bother them. They were excited to show their wares from China.
Is there any difference in the way that they are either displaying their wares or trying to approach possible sales targets or whatever? Any change whatsoever that you can discern?
And not that I can discern, but we are only one day in. Today's day two of the conference. So I plan to go to the areas that are the most concerned for the U.S. government, and that's artificial intelligence, robotics, autonomous driving, and there are plenty of Chinese companies from in those fields. And I want to ask them about this, because at the same time that this incredible conference is going on with about 4,500 exhibitors, the FBI is also exhibiting, and they've got signs out saying, you know, be careful, trade shows are perfect places where for trade secrets to be taken and stolen. I found that really interesting. You've got a little presence right at the entrance of the main hall.
Well, while we're on the subject of politics, people must have heard that the U.S. government is shut down. Has this played any part of the show so far?
Well, it has. I think about 10 U.S. Government officials have had to cancel. That's including U.S. Secretary of Transportation Elaine Chao. And that's a big deal, because the self-driving car industry, they're starting to become an industry of self-driving cars. They've created this week a trade organization so that they can promote their policy issues. And, you know, the number one person they would want to promote to is the Secretary of Transportation. Just try to change the rules so that self-driving vehicles will be on the road. So, you know, there's three areas that are really driving the show, and one of them is self-driving. I mean, every car company's here, and in a few minutes, I'm going to go watch a John Deere tractor, self-driving tractor, demonstrate outside of, hopefully not indoors, but out in a parking lot in Las Vegas.
Somehow that brings a comedy film to mind, but I don't remember which one it was. Now, what about the fun stuff? What about the highlights of the show so far as you're concerned?
Well, this show has a lot of the same things I've seen before when I've been here, which is a lot of robots, a lot of drones. There's a new theme this year, which is resilience. So I've been talking to people who have created technologies to help you, you know, connect to a satellite when cell networks go down during an emergency, create water in places that are water poor. But then I saw this really, to me as a parent, something that really appealed to me, which is a Chinese company that basically has like a little disc that uses LED light to clean your smartphone. You basically put it on the smartphone and all the little microbes that have gathered there all day have disappeared. So this is a new company that's about ready to launch. I think it's called F59S.
Of course, the question must be, does it also do windows, right?
Right. And there are robot window washers. I mean, basically what this CES is that's really interesting to me is that this is really the revolution of sensors. How sensors and everything can change, you know, where you, you know, what you do with your life. And, you know, some of it seemed to me kind of silly when it first started, maybe about 5 years ago. But now you can kind of see, oh, this it can be really useful. If a sensor tells you, for example, a sensor if you're on a bicycle, a sensor tells you that you've been hit by a car, sets off an airbag to save your life. I mean, there's so much creativity on the floor of how to use sensors to really solve very, very narrow problems. And the big thing that everybody says is coming is that all these sensors and devices start talking to themselves. So your airbag sensor for your bike is talking to your cell phone is talking. And when that happens, that will make that might really change people's lives.
Yeah, it might leave us out of the conversations, right?
It might. I mean, the devices might just get on with life while we're still trying to figure out where our shoes are.
Which we're still doing. Michelle Quinn is VOA Silicon Valley Bureau Chief, and she's been talking with us from the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. Michelle, thanks so much.
Thank you.
VOA Special English. A way to learn American English and much more. Broadcasting a half hour of world news and features every day on radio. You can also find Special English on television and online at voaspecialenglish.com. For 50 years, helping people understand world events and the language and culture of America.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Kenyan authorities have detained three Chinese nationals and a local man after over-alleged illegal possession of wildlife products such as rhino horn. The suspects appeared in a magistrate's court Wednesday in the capital, Nairobi. They'll remain in detention pending further police investigation. This is VOA Asia.
It seems so simple. Take some plastic and drop it into this contraption, add heat, and out comes diesel fuel and petrol.
Well, what you've been listening to is a piece by Kevin Enox of VOA, ending our dependence on carbon in all of its forms, especially plastics and petroleum products, is a fairly constant endeavor of engineers and entrepreneurs. Kevin Enox reports on two recent interesting advances in the sciences of recycling plastics and also moving beyond gas-powered cars.
It seems so simple. Take some plastic and drop it into this contraption, add heat, and out comes diesel fuel and petrol that can instantly be used to run a diesel generator. Surprisingly, says inventor Christopher Cost, it is that simple.
A kilo of plastic gives a liter of liquid. It's separated between diesel and petrol.
The team that put this device together says the goal is to keep the units small and affordable. That should allow developing countries to create fuel and help cut down on plastic waste, says François Denel of the French environmental group Earthwake.
The mission of this machine is to collect plastic waste, especially in developing countries, and to create value and jobs. We want the model to be economically sustainable so it can be duplicated more and more as time goes by.
And this is the Nexo, a new fuel cell car from Hyundai. Product manager Sylvie Chile says its only emission is clean oxygen.
To make the car run, you need oxygen and hydrogen, which in the fuel cell stack are mixed. There's a chemical reaction, and that produces electricity. To get oxygen, we don't carry the oxygen on board. We use the oxygen that is contained in the air as we drive through.
But that oxygen has to be incredibly clean, so it's run through three different filters before it's used to help power the car. And then it's sent back into the atmosphere, cleaner than when it went in. The Hyundai engineers say driving 1.6 kilometers in their Nexo removes the same amount of pollution that a diesel truck puts into the atmosphere every 3.2 kilometers. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Taiwan's military Wednesday announced a series of newly designed large-scale military drills for this year aimed at countering China's renewed threat to use force to gain control over the island. While Taiwan's armed forces regularly hold these exercises, this year's drills are being drafted based on newly adopted tactics for defending against a possible Chinese invasion. This is VOA Asia. Over a billion people in the world speak English. Another 2 billion are in the process of learning it or trying to learn it. English grammar horrifies and bewilders many, even native speakers, and one seasoned linguist decided to make it easier, at least for New Yorkers. Grammar guru Ellen Jovin's mission is to help all who need it make their way through the confusing world of American English. Nina Mishneva has the story.
A collapsible table, books, a smile, and a profound knowledge of English grammar. Ellen Jovin has everything that she needs. And the New York subway has a new unofficial stop for grammar lovers.
Hello, welcome to Grammar Table.
Grammar Table. All right. I love it.
Jovin is a lover and popularizer of English grammar. Together with her husband, she owns a business communication development company. Online and traditional classes are her life. Yet, she decided to spice things up and set up camp in the Big Apple's subway and the city streets.
I put the sign up and it took 30 seconds for someone to come up and ask me a question. How many words do I think Donald Trump knows?
While that is more a political question than a grammatical one, Jovin believes understanding the rules of language structure will help people understand each other on the international level.
Vaguer than that, but I have read that a collective noun, is that what you're
calling? Yeah. So it's a special case. We can make special cases, right? Or do you want everything to be consistent?
Students and pensioners, engineers and housekeepers, actors and fellow linguists. The Grammar Table attracts a variety of people for whom English is filled with mysteries. The most popular questions are about participles and commas.
For example, if I say he ordered salad, spaghetti, and soda, right before the and, you can put a comma if you want in English. And it's called the Oxford comma, or sometimes the serial comma.
New York subway riders accepted the new girl in town quite easily. Musicians, policemen, and even English teachers often stop by to chat.
Things like that that deal with language, that deal with culture, it's refreshing from some of the other things that go on.
Not all questions are about English or in English. Jovin speaks Spanish, Italian, Portuguese, German, French, Chinese, Korean, and Japanese fluently, and is learning a few more languages. For Nina Vishnova in New York, Anna Rice, VOA News.
That is going to wrap things up for us today. You've been listening to VOA Asia. You can get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. Download our podcast and take VOA Asia with you. And you can find us at voanews.com. And let's hear from you. VOA Asia Facebook, along with our email, voaasia@voanews.com. That's voaasia@voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Dan Crafton, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and the VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Skylar Ogden, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Enjoy your day.